Radio Prague News.
The Prime Minister has said that he will push for Václav Klaus's demands to be met at a summit in Brussels, but he first needs a guarantee that the President will not raise any further problems with the Lisbon Treaty. Former Czech President Václav Havel has criticised Barack Obama for refusing to receive the Dalai Lama until after a state visit to China in November, and three men have been handed jail sentences after stealing hundreds of memorial plaques from the Terezín Holocaust Victims National Memorial. The Czech cabinet met on Monday to discuss President Václav Klaus's conditions for signing the Lisbon Treaty. After the meeting, Prime Minister Jan Fischer said that his government was willing to negotiate with lawmakers in Brussels to have Mr. Klaus's conditions met, but the Prime Minister added he would first need a guarantee from Mr. Klaus that this was truly the Czech president's last request. Mr. Fischer said that he would discuss Mr. Klaus's demands at an EU summit at the end of October. Mr. Klaus has said he will only sign the EU reform document if the Czech Republic is granted a special opt-out that would prevent ethnic Germans forced out of their homes after World War II from claiming back their property. The Czech Republic is the last country in the European Union to ratify the Lisbon Treaty, designed to streamline decision-making in the 27-nation bloc. Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer has said that Prague will ratify the Lisbon Treaty by the end of the year. At the Forum 2000 Human Rights Conference in Prague on Monday, Václav Havel criticised the recently decorated Nobel Peace Prize winner Barack Obama for refusing to receive the Dalai Lama until after a state visit to China in November. In his speech, the former Czech president praised the way the world had developed in the 20 years following the fall of the Iron Curtain. He complained, however, that Western society prized economic growth above all else, with human rights being just the cherry on the cake in today's world. Forum 2000, which was co-founded by Mr. Havel in 1997, runs until Tuesday. Three men have been handed jail sentences after stealing hundreds of memorial plaques from the Terezín Holocaust Victims National Memorial site. The men then sold the metal plaques at a scrapyard close by for around 50,000 crowns, which is nearly $2,900. The thieves caused over 1 million crowns worth of damage to the memorial, which is now guarded by CCTV. On Monday, a court in Litoměřice handed Libor Mirga, Miroslav Daňo and Petr Hrycko sentences ranging between 3.5 and 4.5 years. This high-profile theft brought about changes in Czech legislation when it came to light last year. Scrapyards are no longer allowed to purchase metal objects that look like they may have come from a religious or a public site. They must also register everything that they do buy. Greenpeace activists scaled the roof of the Czech Republic's government offices on Monday to protest against proposals to reshape the country's energy policy. They were later removed by police. According to the activists, the Ministry of Trade and Industry's proposals could see the limits set on coal mining in the Czech Republic reassessed. 2 years ago, locals in the towns of Horní Jičín and Černice voted against the liquidation of their towns, while Czech Coal said it was willing to invest up to 22 billion crowns, which is around $1.3 billion, into the excavation of the area. Industry and Trade Minister Vladimir Došovský is proposing that the government prevent a gas crisis this winter by mining more Czech coal and building more nuclear power plants. And now to the weather. It should be overcast and rainy over the next couple of days, with temperatures ranging between 6 and 10 degrees Celsius. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. In today's program, President Klaus's insistence on new conditions before he signs the Lisbon Treaty draws grim reaction in Brussels. We'll have all the latest details. If you're a fan of steeplechase, a phenomenal victory for a legendary Czech jockey in this year's Velká Pardubická. And almost gone, but not quite, the Czech national football squad has only the slimmest of hopes of reaching next year's World Cup. Then, a little later in the program, be sure to stay tuned for One-on-One, when we talk to former model-turned-photographer Patty Boyd, exhibiting now in the Czech capital. Boyd most famously was married to the Beatles' George Harrison and later to the legendary guitarist Eric Clapton, and she was the muse behind some very well-known songs indeed. Her story today.
One day I was just a model, like lots of other girls, running around London, and then the next day I was dating George Harrison, and suddenly my life changed.
If the Czech Constitutional Court finds that the EU's Lisbon Treaty is in line with Czech law, the country's president, Václav Klaus, would have to sign ratification, bringing the document into effect for the whole of Europe. But on Friday, Mr. Klaus made international headlines when he said he would only do so on one condition, that a special guarantee is included, preventing any possible property claims from ethnic Germans expelled from Bohemia and Moravia after World War II. So, how is the rest of the EU reacting to this latest move on the part of the Eurosceptic Czech president? That's a question Jan Richter put to Czech Radio's correspondent in Brussels, Ondřej Hoska.
The situation in Czech Republic is clearly a major issue right now. Europe discusses reform of its institutions for 8 years, and everybody would like to see an end of this process. So you can say yes to the Lisbon Treaty, you can say no to the Treaty of Lisbon, but nobody understands how it is possible that the legitimately elected parliament in Czech Republic ratifies the treaty. However, one person, the president, refuses to sign it. So nobody understands the stand of Czech Republic, and I think that the worst thing that can happen to a member state is that you are an unreliable partner, and that's what the Czech Republic is right now.
So would you say that the perception of Václav Klaus as a troublemaker is extended in Brussels to the whole of the Czech Republic?
Of course. The image of Czech Republic has worsened considerably in this year. You know, there was the fall of the government in the middle of Czech presidency. That's not something that you can expect would strengthen the position, the role of a member state inside the European Union.
Do people understand the motivation of Václav Klaus? Do, for example, your colleagues from European media ask you about what he wants?
No one really understands the process in Czech Republic and the conditions which our president is pushing for. I think that everybody is aware of the fact that this is about President Klaus establishing his power domestically.
So what is the action plan? What do EU officials suggest be done concerning ratification in the Czech Republic? Is it just sit and wait whether Mr. Klaus signs it?
Right now, according to some comments made by high diplomats, I think that everybody now waits for Czech government and its stance towards the behavior of our president. I think that everybody now has to wait for Prime Minister Jan Fischer's decision. Tomorrow, the Prime Minister will be here in Brussels discussing the process with Commission's President José Manuel Barroso. And I really think that Brussels cannot do much, perhaps shortly before the summit of the European Council at the end of October. You can expect some kind of proposal, but right now everybody has to wait how the Czech government will establish its position towards the President of the Republic, because it's also hard to understand here in Brussels how it is possible that the government is on the defensive vis-à-vis President Václav Klaus, because theoretically it should have been the government that has to play a more assertive role in foreign policy.
Well, it isn't always easy explaining the situation there. That was Czech Radio's correspondent in Brussels, Ondřej Hoska, on reaction in Brussels to the latest steps by the Czech president, which have some people wondering just what is going on. A new wide-scale poll has revealed that most Czechs have witnessed corruption. The survey results come hard on the heels of moves by corruption watchdogs to push the current caretaker government into taking action against the problem. In particular, they want a clampdown on corruption in the public sphere. Chris Johnstone has more.
The survey by the polling agency SANEP found that 64% of Czechs questioned say they have witnessed corruption in some form or another. 38% said they had been offered bribes, and 19% said they had accepted them. A third of those surveys, mostly the well-off business people, said they had offered bribes. The survey was quite large, with more than 12,000 people out of the polling agency's database of 115,000 selected as a cross-section of Czech society responding to internet questions. SANEP spokesman Oldřich Zajíc says the results were startling.
The results were surprising, And we feel that it's pretty concerning numbers, the high amount of the corruption level in Czech Republic.
He added that the survey was carried out by the agency itself because it is a high-profile issue.
The survey was planned because we feel it's a pretty strong topic. What's going on through the last 2 years or 3 years, the corruption events and scandals on the political fields.
A similar survey by international corruption watchdog Transparency International in the summer revealed that 11% of Czechs surveyed said they had paid bribes at least once over the previous year. Perhaps more worrying was the fact that 90% of those who were asked for bribes let the matter drop and did not make any official complaints. And around two-thirds of Czechs said they had no confidence in government efforts to tackle corruption. Transparency International is currently one of a group of organisations leading calls for the current Czech caretaker government to take a series of key steps to clamp down on corruption in some of its strongholds in the public sector. The corruption watchdog co-signed an open letter to the government last week, calling, for example, for the government to introduce electronic auctions for public tenders so that the awarding of big contracts would be more transparent and less open to abuse. The letter also urged the government to scrutinise new rules for joint ventures between the public sector and state, introduce a database on EU funds to show who is getting what, and introduce clear rules separating the public administration from party politics and cronyism. Minister of the Interior, Martin Petsina, has signalled that he wants an anti-corruption drive to be one of its priorities over the next months. But anti-corruption clampdowns have been launched in the past with apparently little success.
Chris Johnstone reporting there. Okay, Radio Prague is the name of the station and radio.cz is the website to go to for all the latest news from the Czech Republic. Now, we've seen a very eventful last few days in the world of Czech sport. Ian Willoughby has the roundup.
First up today, it's football, and unless a minor miracle occurs, the Czech Republic won't be going to the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. The Czechs beat Poland 2-0 in Prague on Saturday night, with second-half goals from Tomáš Necid and Jaroslav Plašil. But a game taking place in Bratislava at the same time didn't go the Czech Republic's way. Slovenia beat the hosts Slovakia 2-0, making it all but certain that those two teams will top the group. The only hope the Czechs have now is if they beat Northern Ireland at home on Wednesday, and the Slovenes somehow fail to overcome the part-timers of San Marino, who last won a game 5 years ago, and that was against Liechtenstein. Ivan Hašek took over as Czech manager when World Cup qualification was already looking uncertain. He was asked what he'd said to his players after Saturday's game.
Of course, we thank them for their performance and approach. Nobody was celebrating in the dressing room, but at the same time, they're pros. They fulfilled their duties for the national team with total dedication. As long as I've been here, I couldn't say anybody had worked less than we asked them to. Quite the opposite, and they also take a really responsible approach for the final game because they know the game is at home and they don't want to disappoint the fans.
Ivan Hašek appointed himself national coach in his role as head of the Czech Football Association. He's unlikely to stay on as manager for much longer and said he'll make his plans clear after the game against Northern Ireland. As for the players, Marek Jankulovski, who is 32 and has 77 caps, will pull on the Czech jersey for the last time on Wednesday. Moving on to a phenomenal story from the world of horse racing. On Sunday, the great Czech jockey Josef Vanja came first in the Velká Pardubická on Tiumen to make it a record 6 wins in the grueling steeplechase. Vanja is 57 years old next week and is said to be the oldest professional jump jockey in the world. Also a trainer, he had actually retired last year, but on Sunday he utilised his experience from 22 previous rides in the race to send two men in front with only one obstacle, a hurdle, left to jump.
He isn't a top-class horse on the flat, but he really has great stamina. 16 was maybe a threat, but by then I was coming home. I didn't look round as I couldn't see any horse either on my left or right. With maybe 40 metres to go, I started to believe I could win the Velká Pardubická for the sixth time.
Tiu Men was considered to be the weakest of four horses trained by Vanya, taking part in the 119th Velká Pardubická. And he said afterwards he was annoyed runner-up 16, another of his horses, hadn't come first for the third year in a row. As for whether he himself will race again next year, the jockey, a national legend in the Czech Republic, wasn't saying. That's all the sport for today.
Ian will be there with the sport and very cool stuff with the jockey Vanya there. Other than that, all I can say is go San Marino. And of course, more sport again on Radio Prague next week at the same time. Now though, we move on to today's main feature, one-on-one with guest Patty Boyd. She talked to Christian Falvey recently at the opening of her show in Prague.
The model Patty Boyd was the inspirational force behind two of the greatest modern musicians, quiet Beatle George Harrison and the legendary Eric Clapton. Both her former husbands, also very close friends, immortalized her in some of their most famous songs and popular ballads. Now on display in Prague's Old Town is a collection of Patty's private photographs from the inside of that triangular love story, the unintended moral of which is that behind every great man, or two, is a great woman. Patty Boyd herself was in Prague to share her memories as well, and she told me about how her life's fortunes started taking shape around the age of 20.
I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life after I left school, but my mother got me a job working with Elizabeth Arden. I was there for 2 months, and somebody came in and suggested I become a model, and they introduced me to an agency, and that's how. And then I had to visit lots of photographers to try and get work.
And you fulfilled the dream of every young woman by meeting a Beatle one day.
I did. One of the jobs, I thought it was a job, was to go and be interviewed, and I thought I was going to be interviewed for a TV commercial. But it turned out it was the same director, but now he was directing the Beatles' first movie. And I got a part of playing a schoolgirl in this.
And so how did you meet George Harrison? What was that first meeting like?
There were three of us schoolgirls on the train, and the train left London, left Paddington Station, and then it stopped, and four familiar figures jumped onto the train, and they all came into our carriage to introduce themselves. And I thought, oh my God, George Harrison is so good looking.
Did he ask you out straight away, or how did it transpire?
He did. He asked me out at the end of the day shooting, and unfortunately I had to say no because I had a boyfriend.
That's really hard to believe, you know.
I know.
You say it, but
I
it's
know.
Difficult to believe.
I know. Well, I felt that I would be disloyal to my boyfriend if he was expecting to have dinner with me that night. And these were the days before mobile phones, so I couldn't call him.
And make an excuse.
Exactly.
But so, as it happened, you started dating and you later got married. What was it like to be thrust into this world of the most famous men on the planet?
I loved it to begin with, but then it became quite difficult because we weren't free enough to go where we wanted to because, you know, there are always fans. Everywhere you go, there are fans. Even if you go out for dinner, somebody will come in the middle of a conversation and ask for an autograph. It's quite a difficult life to be with somebody who's so well known.
And you weren't used to that at all before. So
no.
was it a change of reality from one day to the next, or how would you describe it?
Almost like that, yes. It almost was. I mean, one day I was just a model like lots of other girls running around London. And then the next day I was dating George Harrison and suddenly my life changed.
What were your relationships with the other members of the Beatles like?
How did you get on with the rest of the band?
Oh, I love them. They were the most amusing people together. I mean, if you had four of them in this room now, you would just be in awe because they were so funny, so really quick-witted, and I felt very privileged to be in their company. But they were fun. They were great fun. I think Ringo was the easiest to get along with. He seemed to be the more friendly.
Are you still in touch today?
Yes, we live very near each other.
Was it like that, all for one for all? They were always involved in each other's activities.
Yeah, I mean, they were very, very closely knit. I mean, they were like brothers.
And that wasn't difficult for their girlfriends?
No, we just went along with it. I mean, you know, if you remember, we were all young then, so what else were we going to do? Far more fun to hang out with them.
Because you're a sweet and lovely girl, I love you. Because you're a sweet and lovely girl, it's true. I love you more than ever, girl, I do.
You were also with them the time they tried LSD for the first time. Can you tell me about that experience?
Yes, I can. John and George, Cynthia and I had been invited by our dentist for dinner. We went and we had a nice dinner and then we wanted to leave because we wanted to see a band playing, friends of John's. And they said, oh, no, you must have some coffee. So we stayed and had some coffee. And then we said, we must go. And the dentist said, you can't leave. Why not? Because you've just had LSD. I didn't know what he was talking about. But John was the only person who had heard of it, and he got really angry, and I didn't understand why he was angry. And then suddenly I felt the effect of this drug, which was very strong and lasts for about 7 hours, and you can't get rid of it. It's very scary. So that was the start.
And what happened in those 7 hours?
Well, we went to the club where we were meant to go, and people kept changing. You know, it was like having it's a hallucinogenic. And people kept changing, as far as we were concerned, and becoming very tall and very small. And, you know, everything was moving around like a scary movie. And then we thought we should try and go home, drive to the country. George was driving in a little Mini, and we all got in the Mini, and it took about 2 hours, maybe, or 3 hours, because he was driving so slowly. And we got home, and we thought, we're going to be like this for the rest of our lives. It's horrible.
While you were married to George Harrison, you met Eric Clapton, and he wrote a song about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric used to live in this very large house, and he would always have lots of friends staying. So lots of girls, lots of guys. I mean, people would just go there to crash. We all became friends, you know, as years went by, and then, I don't know, years later, Eric wrote a letter saying that he was in love with me. I didn't realise at the time that the letter was from him. I thought it was from a fan, so I showed it to George. I said, look, you know, look at this fan letter. And I know it was from Eric. So. Then years later, I was in London. He said, come and listen to this record I've just done. We're in the middle of doing. And he played Layla, and I knew straight away that it was about me.
How?
Because it was about our story, you know. And he would refer to me as Layla because this goes back to a book written by a 17th century Persian poet called Nizami. And it's a story of Layla and Majnun. It's a love story. And so Eric really related to this book and wrote this song. So this is how I knew it was about me. Like a fool, fell in love with you. Turn the
whole upside down. You've been the inspiration for some of the greatest songs of the 20th century. What's it like for you when you hear these songs? What's it like to be in a place where they're playing one of these songs that you had such an intimate part in?
I feel very close to the songs. I feel almost as if they are still a part of me. And I recognise them, you know, from the first chords. I know that it's, you know, a song that was written for me, about me.
In making these photographs downstairs, you were clicking away
at a really important time in music history. What was your intention when you were snapping these photos? Were you thinking about art? Were you thinking about recording history?
I was just photographing my friends. I thought no more than that. I didn't project and think that maybe one day these would be good for... I didn't think... In fact, I didn't even realise I had these photographs until like 4 years ago. I just love taking photographs, and this is part of my life. The photographs that you see downstairs in the gallery are photographs of people that were in my life. They weren't photographs of famous people, do you know what I mean? Because this was how my life was.
Well, one more question. You were a great inspiration for these men. Were they also a great inspiration for you?
I'm sure they were, because, you know, I didn't spend all these years with them without learning something. And I learned a lot from them. I learned the appreciation of music, for a start. And many other things that, you know, it's like a relationship with anyone. You always learn something from them, and they do from you.
What a story, Patty Boyd there on Radio Prague. And as an aside, the moral of the story for me, though, is never to complain about company coffee again. I'm Jan Wellinger for all of us here at the station. I want to thank you for listening and tune in again soon. Bye-bye.